All right, we do return to Daniel chapter 12. You heard, of course, just in the children's lesson here, what this is all about. As we come to the end of the book, it's a lesson on the resurrection. It's a lesson on the resurrection. I would suggest to you, as we've walked through this book in detail, and we've watched the life of Daniel, and we've seen that he's an example for us of how to live, that really, all of Daniel's life is lived in light of the fact that there is a resurrection. Anyone remember what Daniel's name means? God is judge. God is judge. And I would suggest to you that that is the theme of this whole book. God is the judge. We see that in so many different aspects of this book. We see it in the aspect that God is ruling over all of the earth. He's ruling over all of history and all of creation. And he's bringing about all of history to his end because he's the judge. He's the king. In many senses, the word judge and the word king are synonymous. They come together in many ways. And so we see the fact that God is judge in his sovereign control of history. That, as we saw last week, he laid out all of history hundreds of years in advance because he's the one that's controlling it all and bringing it all about according to his plan and his purposes. He's the judge. But there's another aspect of his judgment as well. And that is the fact that there one day will be justice. There will one day will be a judgment. There one day will be a time when everyone's lives are evaluated according to true righteousness and holiness and justice, according to God's perfect standard. And so as we saw here, as we read Daniel chapter 12, let me go ahead and just pick up there and remind us of what we read. It says in Daniel 12 and chapter 1, "Now at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise. And there will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. And those who have insight will shine brightly like the brightness of the expanse of heaven, and those who lead the many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." You remember the context. This is, we still find ourselves in the section that began all the way back in chapter 10. As Daniel was praying and he was pleading for God to work out his plan and to work out his purpose for his people Israel. Remember, God's people Israel were in exile. They were lowly. And Daniel said, "God, what are you doing? How's your plan being worked out? How's your name being exalted?" So he's pleading and he was praying to God. And God said, "Okay, here's the answer. Here's what I'm doing." And he laid out all of history. And we saw last week as we went to chapter 11 that Daniel was, the angel revealed to Daniel hundreds of years of world history from the time of the Babylonians to the Medo-Persians to the Greeks to the Romans. And we find that he even looks into what is still future to us, the time when the Antichrist comes, starting in chapter 11, verse 36. That there's going to be this one who opposes God and his people so antagonistically. And the message is, this is still part of the plan, right? Even though your people are lowly, even though you're being oppressed, this is still part of God's plan. And in fact, it's only going to get worse, right? The Antichrist is going to come and he's really going to oppress your people, but God is still in control. This is still part of the plan. And I've laid it out in advance so that you know that you could trust me. You know that I'm in control. But here's the beautiful part. There's an end to the story, right? When the Antichrist comes and God's people are oppressed, the story doesn't end there. God will finally have his day. God is the judge. He is the king. He's the one that's in control. And as we come to chapter 12, we find out, how will the story end? What is God going to do to uphold his justice? What is he going to do to uphold his righteousness? How is he going to glorify his name in the end? And the answer is, there's going to be a resurrection. There's going to be a judgment. God is the judge. He's brought about all of history because he's the judge, he's the king, and he's working it out to its end. And when you get to the end, he's going to make all things right. He's going to uphold justice. And so we can live in light of that. That's the message. In one sense, we could just close the stories, close the book right now. It's an important lesson for us all. We all need to live in light of eternity. We need to live in light of the fact that there's going to be a judgment, that there's going to be justice. We don't believe in annihilationism, right? We don't believe that when you die, that's it for you. We don't believe that, you know, you die and you're buried and you decompose and that's it. No, all of us will one day face the judge. You know, we've seen this hinted at throughout the book of Daniel. We see these glimpses of the glorious judge. We see this picture of the Son of Man, the Ancient of Days. This reminder that one day we're all going to face the judge. Your life will be taken into account and there will be justice. It's this reminder what are we really living for here? What's important in life? How can we live in light of eternity is if we have this understanding that there will be a resurrection. That when we die, life is not over for us. Let me just kind of remind us of some of these different passages that talk about, in the book of Daniel, that talk about the judgment. Let's go back just to a few passages real quick to see this. Go to chapter 7. Chapter 7. We'll pick up in verse 9. In the middle of another chapter that speaks of God laying out all of history, very similar to the one we just looked at in chapter 11. Look at verse 9. It says, I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His vesture was like white snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was ablaze with flames. Its wheels were a burning fire. A river of fire was flowing and coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands were attending him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him. And notice this, the court sat, and the books were open. In the middle of this chapter, once again, of how God's working out history and this Antichrist who's going to come and oppose God's people, there's the reminder that one day there will be justice. Right? There's this little horn you remember from chapter 7 who boasts and opposes God and his people. Throughout the book, we keep seeing this Antichrist appearing. And he's opposing God and he's prospering and he's attacking God's people. But then there's the reminder that one day the judge will judge. There's this awesome judge. You just listen to this description of him. He's like white snow, the hair of his head like pure wool, then his throne ablaze with flames, wheels burning fire, and a river of fire flowing before him. How awesome is that description of God? I would suggest is a picture of God the Father. God is the judge. He's sitting on his throne as the king. I mean, that understanding, that picture, that image should really within all of us create this response of fear, this response of the awesomeness of God, that there is a judge out there. That there's a judge that knows the difference between right and wrong. It's an awesome picture, and it's a reminder that even though wickedness is prospering now, one day wickedness will be judged. Continue on in chapter 7, jump to verse 26. And the same thing, right? Speaking of these horns, look at verse 25. And he will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. He will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. Right? So once again, there's this Antichrist who's opposing God and his people, and he's oppressing them. And the question that they're crying out is, where is justice? And so what do we see once again? Verse 26, but the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated and destroyed forever. Right? He's opposing God, he's prospering, he's this strong king who's killing God's people and persecuting them, and you cry out, where is justice? And the answer is, justice is coming. God is the judge. He is sovereign over history. That's part of his plan, and at the end of his plan, he's going to make things right. Right? There's this idea of a court. The court is going to sit. right? The books will be opened, it talks about. We'll see that, right? That the justice will be had because God is the judge. And so as you see, this Antichrist, this one who opposes God and his plan, he will be judged. And then notice verse 27. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions will serve and obey him. Right? At that time, the saints who have been oppressed, the saints who have been attacked and persecuted and killed, they will be given the kingdom. They will reign with Christ, right? Justice will be had. There will be righteousness upheld at that time. Right? You look around this world, once again, we're still in the times of the Gentiles. We don't see perfect justice. And we don't see grave injustice in this country like in other parts of the world. But we know that there is injustice going on. We know that things are not right. And there's that reminder that one day things will be right. There will be a judgment. History is coming to its end. Continue on even to chapter 10. Remember this vision that we saw of this man. Chapter 10 and verse 5. And this is, I would suggest to you, a vision of the Son of Man, the Lord Jesus Christ himself. Chapter 10, starting in verse 5. Then I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and feet like the gleam of burnished bronze, and the sound of his words like the sound of a tumult. Right? Once again, this reminder of this, the awesomeness of God, the fearfulness of God, eyes like a flaming fire, or his appearance like lightning, eyes like flaming torches, feet like burnished bronze. Just like the earlier picture of God the Father, here the picture of God the Son is an awesome one. It's a picture that reminds us that even though the world does not seem to be going according to God's plan, that God is still the awesome judge, and we need to live in light of fearing him. Right? We need to live in light of the end times when there will be a resurrection. And as we'll see, even as we come to chapter 12, people don't live like that. Right, I'll just kind of show you this in chapter 12. I would suggest to you that that's the point of, well, let's kind of jump down to, let's start in verse 4, and I'll kind of read this for you, and I'll show you this. But as for you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until the end of time. Many will go back and forth, and knowledge will increase. Right, people are going to go back and forth. They're going to live their lives. Knowledge will increase. They're going to go on with their lives as normal. As we'll continue on, where does it say? Look at verse 10. Right? Many will be purged, purified, and refined, but the wicked will act wickedly. And none of the wicked will understand, but those who have insight will understand. Right? God is the judge, but you know what? People aren't going to live like it. People are going to go to and fro. They're going to live their own way. The wicked are still going to act wickedly. Right? In other words, God is this awesome judge. There's going to be a judgment. It's this reality, but yet people don't live like that. They go on as if the coming judgment isn't going on. But it's the reminder, even though people live like that, even though the world doesn't understand, they don't have the spiritual insight to understand that there is a judge, it doesn't negate the fact that there is a judge. It doesn't matter how they live. They live as if there is no judge. They may deny that there's a judge. But I would suggest to you that the message of Daniel is, even though people are going to continue to act wickedly and live their lives as if there is no judge, this book tells us there is a judge. And this book tells us there is a coming judgment. Right? And so we need to live in light of that. And I would suggest to you that Daniel lived in light of this coming judgment. Daniel, his whole life, was lived in light of the fact that God is the judge. And I would suggest to you that there's four ways that Daniel lived in such a way in light of the greatness, the awesomeness, the fear of God, in light of the fact that God is the judge. We're going to survey these as we walk through the book of Daniel. Right? God is the judge. There will be a judgment. So how do you live in light of that? How should that transform our lives? let me just kind of survey a couple things for us as we walk through the book of Daniel, and you'll see, hopefully, how all these themes tie together. All right, Daniel chapter 1. You don't even necessarily have to turn there. I'm just going to quickly walk through the book and show how this all ties together. Remember Daniel chapter 1? Right, Daniel and his three friends exiled out of their country to Babylon, thousands upon thousands of miles away from home. They were probably about 15 or 16. I don't remember the exact age that they were at that time. They were young men, right? Exiled thousands of miles away from home, no parents, no nothing. They were kind of hand-picked to be groomed to be leaders within the Babylonian kingdom. Right? Think about all the pressures to conform. Right? Yeah, you could be a high-ranking official within the greatest kingdom on earth. Here you are, this hand-picked 15-year-old boy. And you know what Daniel did? He risked his life. He risked his reputation. He risked his rising up the quote-unquote corporate ladder to not defile himself with unclean food. Why in the world would a 15-year-old boy, taken away from his country, his friends, his family, why in the world would he risk everything to not eat steak and wine? Right? Why would he do that? It's only because he lived in light of the fact that God is the judge. It's only because he lived in light of the fact that God is the judge. He understood that there's something greater than what's going on here on this earth. That's the only reason you would ever do such a ridiculous thing as Daniel did. Right? Daniel chapter 2. Remember Daniel chapter 2? Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, right? And he didn't understand the dream, so he went to his wise men. The wise men couldn't tell him the dream. And so he's like, all right, that's it, you stupid wise men. I'm killing all the wise men in the whole kingdom. So they go to Daniel's door, knock, knock, knock. All right, Daniel, we're here to kill you. Right? What's the normal response that you'd expect? There you go. Panic. Panic and fear. Right? But how did Daniel respond? Wisdom. Boldness. Strength. He's like, okay, take me before the king. I have an answer to this. I know the God who's greater than you are. Right? And he declares the greatness of God. He stands boldly for the truth. Right? Why would you do that? How could you live when these soldiers come to kill you? How can you live with calm and cool? It's because you know that there's a king that's greater than Nebuchadnezzar, right? It's because you know that they can't even kill you in an ultimate sense. You know that there's a resurrection coming, right? It gives you a boldness. It gives you a confidence to live in light of the fact that God is the greatest king, and there is nothing that man can do on earth compared to what he can do. And so you live with a boldness and a confidence. Right, chapter 3, the fiery furnace. I love this chapter. You know Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know what happened, right? Bow down to the image. I mean, you remember the picture. There was thousands upon thousands of Nebuchadnezzar's officials all lined up to bow down in synchronization as the orchestra played to show off Nebuchadnezzar's grandeur and his greatness. And everybody bowed but three men. And they stood standing. I mean, the fiery furnace was already there and it was already hot. It was there ahead of time because Nebuchadnezzar wanted to put that fear in people so that they would bow. But three men didn't bow. Why would they risk it all? They knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that they were going to be thrown into that fiery furnace if they didn't bow. But they believed that there's a God. They believed that there's a judge, there's a king who is greater than Nebuchadnezzar, and they lived in light of that. Right? They lived in light of these spiritual realities that we can't see. It gave them a boldness. It gave them a confidence. Just listen to the words in chapter 3. You know what they said. See if I could find it real quick here. Daniel chapter 3, verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. That's bold. Right? This is Nebuchadnezzar, the greatest king on earth. We will not worship your gods, O king. We're not going to do it. And remember, right before that, Nebuchadnezzar said, what God is able to deliver you from my hand? And they said, our God is able to deliver us out of your hand, O king. I mean, direct contradiction of what the king said. Well, how could they do that? Where does that boldness come from? Where does that confidence come from? Where does that trust come from? It comes from the fact that they know that there's a judge. They know there's going to be a judgment. They know that there's going to be a resurrection. They lived in light of it. Right? We could go on and on. Daniel in the lion's den. Right? Why would you pray when you know you're going to get thrown in the lion's den? It's because you know that there's a judge. Listen. Listen carefully. This understanding of God's sovereignty, that he's the judge, that there's a judgment coming, this is not just head knowledge. This is not just head knowledge. It should radically transform the way we live. It should make us live radically different than the world around us. We should have the kind of confidence, boldness, trust in God that no one else has. And then let me kind of walk through that. That's the first thing I would suggest, that this understanding of the greatness of God should produce in us, is this boldness, this trust in God. Let me just show you a couple other examples. We already kind of looked at these, but just to take you to the specific verses. Chapter 2, verses 27 and 28. Right? I just love this, how, you know, Daniel, his three friends, they're before these the king of the greatest kingdom on earth, and they just boldly say, you know what, king, you're not that great. God is the greatest. It's just amazing. Verse 27, Daniel answered before the king and said, as for the mystery about which the king has inquired, neither wise men, conjurers, magicians, or diviners are able to declare it to the king. However, there is a God in heaven, right? It just, every time Daniel stands before the king, he's constantly saying, look, there's a God. There's a God who's greater than you. There's a God in the heavens, and he is the most powerful one. You're magicians, nothing. But there's a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. And he has made known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what will take place in the latter days. Right? We already looked at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their boldness. We could look in chapter 5. Once again, Daniel, verse 17. Then Daniel answered, Daniel 5, 17. Daniel answered and said before the king, keep your gifts for yourself or give your rewards to someone else. However, I will read the inscription to the king and I will make the interpretation known to the king. Look at this. You're talking to, once again, the greatest king on earth at this time. Verse 18. O king, the Most High God granted sovereignty, grandeur, glory, and majesty to Nebuchadnezzar your father. And because of the grandeur which he bestowed on him, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language feared and trembled before him. Whoever he wished, he killed, and whoever he wished, he spared alive. And whoever he wished, he elevated, and whoever he wished, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit became so proud that he behaved arrogantly, he was deposed from his royal throne and glory was taken away from him. It continues on. Notice verse 22. But you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this. But you have exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house before you. It continues on. You just see the boldness. Daniel says to Belshazzar, he's like, look, Belshazzar, God made your father great, or your grandfather great. It wasn't you. It was God. And he didn't humble himself, and so God lowered him. And you know what, Belshazzar? You didn't humble yourself, even though you knew all this. That's bold. Right? This is the king. Once again, it's because he understood that God is the judge. And he lived in light of it. It transforms his life. So number one, if we understand that God is the judge, we understand that there's a coming judgment, we will live with boldness and confidence. We will fear no king. We will fear no person. We will fear no man. We will only fear God. Because as we read those descriptions, right? You read the description of the Ancient of Days, the fire proceeding from his furnace, the eyes of fire from the Son of Man. God alone we should fear. We should fear God alone, no man. Right? And in understanding the fact that God is judge, it will produce that fear of God in us that will cause us never to fear anyone, but give us that boldness to boldly declare the greatness of God and to never cower in fear before any man. So number one, we understand that God is judge, we'll live with boldness. Number two, if we understand that God is judge, we will live with humility. We'll live with humility. Man, this was a characteristic of Daniel. This marked his life. And this is obviously related to another point, which will be we will be people of prayer. Those points are interrelated. But you just see this all throughout Daniel. Daniel was a humble man because he understood that he was not great, his God was great. He's not the king, his God is the king. And so you see this so clearly all throughout. Let's go to Daniel chapter 2. Chapter 2 and verse 30. I love this. Daniel's revealing, Daniel's explaining the dream to Nebuchadnezzar. And notice chapter 2 and verse 30. But as for me, this mystery has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me more than in any other living man, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to the king and that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. I love this. Daniel always gives all the credit to God. He says, look, it's not because of me. It's not because I'm wise. It's not because I'm great. It's not because of anything in me that I am able to interpret this dream. It's because God is great. You see that humility? Right? He understands that God's the king. God's the one that's in control. God's the one that reveals this mystery. It's not because of his wisdom or his greatness or anything, his righteousness, anything of himself. So this understanding of the greatness of God produces within Daniel a great, great sense of humility. Go to chapter 4. Chapter 4, look at verse 35. I love this. This isn't so much, I would say, Daniel's humility, but just once again emphasizing the importance of humility within the book of Daniel. Remember that Daniel chapter 4 is all about Nebuchadnezzar the Great. Nebuchadnezzar, of course, exalting himself in pride, and so God humbling him and making him eat grass like an ox. Right, so once again, the point being, you don't take credit from God. It's the moment that Nebuchadnezzar took the credit for himself, took the glory for himself, then God humbled him. And so that's a huge point within this chapter. But just look at verse 35 as an example, right? And all the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, but he does according to his will in the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. And no one can ward off his hand or say to him, what have you done? And so then look, jump to verse 37. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven. For all his ways, works are true, and all his ways are just. And notice this, and he is able to humble those who walk in pride. That's the main point of the chapter. Right? God is the one that humbles the proud, because God alone is great. So once again, the message of the book of Daniel is, if we understand that God is the judge, we will be humble. We'll be humble like Daniel, and we won't exalt ourselves like Nebuchadnezzar or even Belshazzar in chapter 5. We won't look at that. And let me just show you a couple more examples of Daniel's humility. We've seen these in chapter 9 and chapter 10 as Daniel prays. But I just want to show you this, Daniel 9 and verse 3. So I gave my attention to the Lord God to seek him by prayer and supplications, with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. And I prayed to Yahweh my God and confessed and said, alas, O Lord, the great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant and loving kindness for those who love him and keep his commandments. We have sinned, committed iniquity, acted wickedly, and rebelled, even turning aside from your commandments and ordinances. Right? Notice the humility that Daniel has. Right? He's fasting, he's praying, he's in sackcloth and ashes. That's a sign of humility. Right? Once again, just as he's praying to God, he humbles himself before God. He recognizes that God alone is the one who answers his prayer. So you just see his humility just coming out so clearly. And then in chapter 10, it's made more explicit. As he's once again just praying, he's mourning, verse 2, for three entire weeks. And then you come to chapter 10 and verse 12, and it says explicitly, the angel said to Daniel, Do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before your God, right? Your words have been heard. And I have come in response to your words. So here the angel says to Daniel, as you were praying for 3 weeks, the angel says you were humbling yourself before your God. And that's the angel's words speaking of what Daniel was doing as he was praying. He was humbling himself, he was fasting, he was mourning, he was acknowledging that he's not great, he was praying to God. Once again, this attitude of dependence, this attitude of humility. Right? Anyway, I'm just surveying these themes through the book, but hopefully you see that, right? You understand that God is the judge, that God's the king. We don't take any credit for ourselves, we humble ourselves. We give all the credit to him. And we seek his will, we seek his desires, his plan to be worked out. We seek God's will and not our own. Because once again, he's the king and we are not. So if we understand God's greatness, we will greatly humble ourselves. We'll acknowledge that he alone is the king. Okay, thirdly, so if we understand that God is the judge, we'll live with boldness, we'll live with humility. Isn't that interesting? Often those two things don't seem to go together. Right? Often we think of humility as being kind of a waffly leaf, you know, like that kind of blows in the wind, wherever the wind blows. We think of someone who's humble as being weak. Now, that's not the case, right? If we have an understanding that God is the king, we will be genuinely humble, but we also be bold and strong and confident because our trust is in the Lord. Those two things come together so clearly in the life of Daniel. Now, all these kind of relate together. The third one is, we'll be people of wisdom. People of wisdom. And this is so great because if God is the judge, God's the king, God's the greatest, God's the one with wisdom, we don't trust in ourselves, we trust in him, and so he grants us wisdom. We saw this all throughout the book of Daniel. We see Daniel's just portrayed as a man of wisdom. He's one who thought on his feet. He's one who is portrayed as wise through being able to interpret the dreams. You see, he's always living wisely. It's because he's not trusting in his own wisdom. He's not trusting in his own strength. He's just trusting in God. And since God has all wisdom, Daniel's able to respond with the wisdom of God in every situation. Once again, it's because God's the one that's in control. He doesn't trust in himself. He trusts in God. And we could give different examples of this. I think one of my favorite is just the one I already kind of mentioned in Daniel chapter 2, how these guys come knocking on his door wanting to kill him. And let me see if I could find the verse here. Oh, verse 14. It specifically mentions Daniel's wisdom. Then Daniel replied with discretion and discernment to Arioch, the captain of the king's bodyguard, who had gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. And so we see here once again how Daniel didn't panic, but he just thought, well, okay, you're going to kill all the wise men. What's the solution to this problem? It's kind of an impossible situation. Remember if we taught on this many weeks ago, Daniel chapter 2. It's an impossible situation. The king says, we're going to kill all the wise men. But Daniel didn't panic. He said, all right, impossible situation. I need an impossible solution. Let's pray to God and let's ask God to work this out, right? And so you see his wisdom was revealed in the way that he answered, right? His trust in God. And so God gave him the wisdom to do that. We see this, of course, even in the New Testament. We see it in James, right? God's the one that gives wisdom. If anyone lacks wisdom, God will give it to him. So if we understand that God's the greatest, we won't trust in our own strength. We won't trust in our own plans, our own wisdom. We'll trust in God for his wisdom to be worked out. Okay, so we believe that God is the judge. We'll be bold. We'll be humble. We'll be people of wisdom. And finally, in one sense, maybe the most important, we'll be people of prayer. We've seen this over and over and over again in the book of Daniel. Daniel is a book that's just saturated with prayer. Over and over, we see the importance of prayer. And it's because, look, we can't do anything. We're powerless. We're helpless. What can we do? What can we do when the king says, I'm going to kill you? What can we do when we're going to be thrown in the lion's den? When we're going to be thrown in the fiery furnace? We can do nothing. We're powerless. And so we don't trust in our own wisdom and we don't trust in our own strength. We pray to God, and God answers prayer. We saw this in chapter 2 and verse 18, right? Once again, chapter 2, I'll pick up in verse 17. When they're going to go kill all the wise men, what does Daniel do? Verse 17, then Daniel went to his house and informed his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, about the matter. Why? Verse 18, in order that they might request compassion from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his friends might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon, right? God, I mean, the men come in to kill Daniel and his friends. What do? They pray, God, we're going to be killed. Give us wisdom. Give us the interpretation to this matter. And so verse 19, the mystery was revealed. God answers prayer. God answers prayer. You know this, of course, from Daniel chapter 6 so clearly. Daniel in the lion's den, that's why he gets thrown in the lion's den to begin with. It's because he was a man of prayer. It's because he prayed three times a day, and he would not quit. You know what happens in verse 10. I love this. As soon as Darius signs the document, verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had done previously. Right? Even when the law gets signed into order that if you pray to anyone except for Darius, you're going to die, he continues to pray. And he not only continues to pray, he continues to pray openly. Right? What boldness, what confidence. But once again, just a man of prayer. Because he understood God's the king, God's the judge. Darius is not the king. God is the king. And we saw this so clearly in Daniel chapter 9, my favorite chapter in the book. The whole chapter is basically centered around a prayer. Daniel's just humbling himself and praying before his God. Chapter 10 again, humbling himself, fasting for three entire weeks and praying to God. Daniel was a man of prayer. Right? He understood if God is going to be glorified in this world, if God is going to bring about his plan, his purposes, and his kingdom, that it's going to be through him working and not through us working. And so our response to the greatness of God is to be people of prayer. People of prayer. I hope that these lessons start to sink in. None of us live as if we believe this stuff. We don't. We do, not to the degree that we should. Right? I mean, when's the last time you prayed for 3 weeks? Right? When's the last time I did? Is a challenge to us. When have we, I mean, we haven't even been challenged with our lives, but how many times have we not been bold with our faith because of the fear of man? How many times have we depended on our own wisdom? How many times have we been proud? Right? If we understand once again that God is the judge, that God is the king, it will, I guarantee, it will radically affect every aspect of our lives. And these are just four of the prominent ways that it's emphasized throughout the book of Daniel that it will transform our lives. Right? It will radically affect our thinking and everything that we do. I would suggest to us, as we go out into the community, we try to see people come to Christ, it will radically affect the way that we do that. Right? We will do so with great humility, not depending upon ourselves. We will be very prayerful as we go out. We will be very bold as we go out. And God will give us wisdom and the words to say as we go out because we're depending on him. Right? It will radically, you pick any situation, this understanding of the greatness of God will impact that situation. Because one day, as we saw, we looked at these passages, we're going to stand before the judge. His eyes are a flaming fire, right? There will be justice one day. Let's turn back to chapter 12. We turn back to chapter 12. I want you to see just kind of some of this laid out more explicitly as we finish out the book of Daniel. As we saw, verse 2, that at this time when the Antichrist is opposing God's people and there's going to be persecution, there's going to be a time of distress like there's never been before. The worst kind of persecution, in the midst of the worst persecution and the worst trial, at that time, finally at the end, God's going to come and God's going to act and God is going to judge. And I love this. At that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. There's different books mentioned in the book of Daniel. This is interesting. Right here, it's a singular book. Everyone written in the book will be rescued. God has a book. The New Testament would refer to it as the book of life. There's a book where everyone's names are written in this book who trust in God. And you say, well, why does God need a book? Okay, God doesn't need a book. He could remember your name. But it's to give us a point, right? You write things in a book because they're permanent and so that you won't forget. God won't forget, right? If you trust in God, right, it's easy to think, what is God doing? You know, it's been centuries and I don't see God acting, right? Since the time of Christ, Christ died, the world's going on. It seems to be getting worse and not better. What's going on? Is it really worth it to trust in God? Yes, it is. The judgment is coming and God won't forget. God won't forget if you trust in him. Right? He has a book. He has your name in the book. And when the resurrection comes, if your name's in the book, you will be raised to life. And we'll see, you'll participate in the kingdom. It's a great reminder for us. It's worth it. It's worth it. Even though things, like I said, there's turmoil all around, it's still part of God's plan. And in the end, there will be justice. In the end, the king will come. And there's a book. We saw earlier, I'm trying to remember the reference. It talks about that the books will be opened. I think it was in chapter 7. I think in chapter 7, maybe, if I could find it here. What was that? Verse 10? Yeah, right, we read this already, talking about this Ancient of Days. There it says that, we talked about his hair of pure wool and his throne ablaze with flames, his wheels burning like a fire, river of fire flowing out, coming out before him, verse 10. Thousands upon thousands attending him, myriads upon myriads were standing before him. The court sat and the books, plural, were opened. What are these books? Right, these are the books of people's deeds. You see this, once again, Revelation kind of mirrors, expands upon a lot that's been in the book of Daniel. There's books of people's deeds, right? The injustice, the wickedness, you can even see it in the context here. It's all about the Antichrist and his opposition to God. And then there's this vision of the Ancient of Days, his fiery, fearful persona, and this river of fire. And then the books were opened. The court sat. There's going to be justice. There's going to be judgment. No wicked deed that's ever been done is ever going to go unpunished. Right? It's cool, too, how it's not books and books. You notice this? It's books of deed and a book of names. You can see this very clearly in Revelation. But there's going to be justice. There's going to be justice for the deeds of wickedness that were done. Everyone's wicked deeds are recorded in these books upon books of deeds. But for us, for those who trust in God, there's not books upon books of our good deeds. There's just a book with your name in it. Just a book with your name in it. That's what it says in chapter 12, right? Everyone whose name is found in the book. There's this one book that has your name, right? You're covered. You're paid for. You're in the right relationship with God. Right? It's a beautiful truth, right? There's going to be justice. There's going to be judgment. The judge is coming. You want your name written in the book because your deeds are written in the books. Right? There's going to be justice. You're going to stand one day before the judge. We saw this description of the judge, fiery, flaming holiness and purity. Man, that's an awesome thought. And then the thought that there's going to be a court and there's going to be books of your deeds. Look, I don't want no one looking through the book of my deeds. I want my name written in the book. And we need to live in light of that. It's a great truth. And so, as we saw in chapter 12, and there's going to be this resurrection, right? When you die, your life, it's not over, right? We said, this is how you could live now righteously. This is how you could live with boldness, humility, wisdom, and prayer. It's because one day there's going to be a resurrection and you're going to be raised to life. This is awesome. We don't have all the details here in chapter 12, but if you kind of piece together even just the book of Daniel alone, you could see how this is going to happen. The Antichrist is opposing God and his people, and there's going to be massive oppression, And at that time, right when it looks like, well, you see it even in chapter 12 here, verse 7. And I heard a man dressed in linen who was raised above the waters of the river. As he raised his right hand and his left toward heaven, right? He's standing here and he's swearing by him who lives forever. This is kind of an oath posture. You just see this. He's swearing. He says, it will be for a time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years, as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people, all these events will be completed. Right? God's people are going to just be shattered. They're going to be brought to the very end, because we saw this in Zechariah when we walked through it. Right? They're going to be brought to the utter point of distress, and at that time, then God is going to come. That's when Christ is going to come again as king, and that's when there's going to be the resurrection. That's when the kingdom comes. When the king comes again, he's going to set up his kingdom. And at that time, it says, at that time, everyone whose name is in the book will be rescued. And then those who are asleep in the dust of the ground will awake. There's going to be this resurrection when Christ comes again to set up his kingdom. Man, that's going to be glorious. That's what we're looking forward to, this resurrection, this kingdom. When the king is coming again, and all of those who are alive will be rescued, and all of us who have died will be raised to life again to participate in that kingdom. That's what we look forward to, right? It's because we're looking forward to that. It's because we understand that God is the judge and he is ultimately going to bring all these things about. It's because of that that we could live this way now, right? That's how we could live in such a trusting, bold, humble, prayerful way now. It's because we believe these things and it transform our lives in the here and now. Even look at this. Look at, let's see. Let's just kind of keep walking through here. Let's pick up in verse 8. As for me, I heard, but I could not understand. So I said, my Lord, what will be the outcome of these events? And he said, go your way, Daniel. For these words are concealed and sealed up until the end time. Many will be purged, purified, and refined, but the wicked will act wickedly. And none of the wicked will understand, but those who have insight will understand. Right? This is what we said before. It's like, Daniel, look, you know, people aren't going to live in light of this coming judgment. They're not going to live in light of the resurrection. The wicked are just going to keep acting wickedly. But guess what? That does not negate the fact that the kingdom's coming. Just because you look outside and you see all the people all surrounding us, they don't live in light of this king. They don't live in light of this judge. It does not mean that he's not the judge, and it does not mean he's not coming. He is coming. And so then he ends with, let's continue to verse 11. And from the time that the regular sacrifice is abolished and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. So in other words, there's going to be basically 3.5 years where it's really bad, where the Antichrist breaks this covenant with Israel and starts persecuting them. And he says, how blessed is he who keeps waiting and attains the 1,335 days. Right? Blessed is he who endures to the end, who waits through it. Right? You can endure even the worst persecution that the Antichrist would bring if you believe that there's going to be a resurrection. Blessed. How blessed is the one who waits, who endures, right? And if you believe that the kingdom's coming, you believe that the judge is going to judge, you can endure it all. It doesn't matter what you have to endure, you can endure it. You could wait, right? How blessed is he who keeps on waiting and attains the 1,335 days. And I would suggest that 1,335 days is when the kingdom will be established. Right, when Christ comes again, there's going to be this resurrection. And the kingdom is going to be set up. Notice what he says to Daniel in the last verse. But as for you, go your way to the end. Then you will enter into rest and rise again. Right? The resurrection again for your allotted portion at the end of the age. Daniel, go your way. Twice he says that to Daniel. You saw that in verse 9. Here he says it in verse 13. It's like, basically, what the angel's telling Daniel is, don't be overly concerned with all this. Right? Don't just keep going. Just keep living your life. Don't be concerned. Like you don't have to worry about world history being worked out. What you have to do is live your life. Just live your life in light of the fact that God is the judge. Just go your way. Don't worry about it. Don't become overly concerned with all these prophecies. I mean, you could really get consumed with this stuff, right? I mean, we looked at last week, all these details, and I mean, it's a lot of crazy stuff. It'd be easy to get consumed and worried and terrified of, wow, I can't believe the Antichrist is coming, just pull your hair out. No, right? Just go your way. And I love this. Go your way until the end, and then you will enter into rest and rise again. You can almost even translate, go your way in order that you will enter rest and rise again. In other words, live your life righteously, and if you do what is right, then you will rest. In other words, you will die, Daniel. But I love how he even uses a euphemism for death. You will rest, right? For a believer, for someone who trusts in God, your death is merely a rest. That's all it is. It's merely a little sleep. When you die, it's just a little nap, right? And after that nap, you're going to rise again. And I love this, for your allotted portion at the end of the age. Literally for your inheritance, right? What is that? What's your inheritance? You're going to have an inheritance in the kingdom, right? You're going to have a portion. You're going to have, I mean, we don't know exactly all the details of what it is. I don't, whether it's cities that you're going to rule over or what, I don't know. But you're going to have this inheritance in the kingdom of God. You're going to have some portion, some inheritance, right? So that when Christ comes again, and he sets up his kingdom, he reigns as the king, he rules. You, even if you've died, even if you're persecuted, you're going to rise again and you're going to participate with him in his kingdom. Wow. Well, if all of that, right, all these spiritual realities, none of this stuff you can see, I've never seen this vision of the Son of Man, eyes of flaming fire. I've never seen the Ancient of Days, river of fire flowing from before him, right? I can't see into the future and see all these things taking place, but these are spiritual realities. This is fact. This is how the world is today. This is how the world will be in the future. And our understanding of this will radically transform the way we live now. Right? We will be, once again, marked by these four things that I've listed. We'll be marked by boldness, humility, wisdom, and prayer. More things as well, I'm sure, but those are four things that are very clearly emphasized within the book of Daniel. Right? Because of the greatness of God, because of the awesomeness of his majesty and his glory. And I love that statement. Don't just go your way. Don't worry about it. Just live your righteous life. It's a life of that can endure to the end. It doesn't matter what persecution comes. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're thrown in the fiery furnace or in the lion's den or what's going to happen. If you're going to be beheaded, it doesn't matter if the persecution of the Antichrist comes or whatnot. None of that matters because you will participate in the kingdom one day. If you die, you will be raised to life as long as your name's in the book. As long as your name's in the book. Challenging thought for us. Awesome way to the end of the book of Daniel, right? End with the resurrection, end with our hope in the kingdom, end with our hope of participating with Christ, that God is the judge that's one day going to rule. There's going to be justice, right? All the wicked deeds of wicked people will one day be judged. There's a heaven and a hell. I mean, you notice that so clearly in verse 2, right? Everlasting life and everlasting contempt. This is going to last forever. Everlasting life, everlasting contempt. You pick which one you want. I mean, once again, this should put a fire in our bones to go tell people, right, about the gospel. This is spiritual realities, and by God's grace, he has opened our eyes to be able to see that his word here is true, that this is how life is, that this is reality, and that we need to live in light of it. As I said last week, any of you that are interested in joining me, just fasting, praying, meditating today, just to focus on these things. It's so easy, like I said, it's so easy for us to lose focus, right? And we talked about when we read in Daniel chapter 10, to just lose perspective of the fact that God is the king and to live in light of these truths. And we just saw so clearly how Daniel lived in light of these things. So for any of you that wanted to join me in that, you're welcome to, and we'll even as we close the service, we'll spend some time as a body in prayer. But let's just go to prayer as we close here and just focus on God and his judgment and his justice, that he is the judge. And just allow that truth to sink into our minds. Let's go to prayer. Our Father, As we finish out the book of Daniel, we stand in awe of your majesty. Lord, I pray that you would produce within each of us an understanding of your greatness and your fear. Lord, it's so easy for us to live our lives and to go our way as if you're not that great at all. Lord, I thank you for the example of Daniel. What a humble man, what a bold man, what a man of wisdom, what a man of prayer. I pray that all of us would follow his example. I pray that you would, even as we pray and fast and meditate on your word and meditate on your greatness, even some of us today or the rest of us through the rest of our lives, Lord, that you would increase within us an understanding of your majesty, that we'd live in light of the fact that you are the judge. You are the judge of all the earth. We thank you, our Father. We praise you. Pray these things in Christ's name. Amen.